It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. And, of course, one of the interesting things that we do each week is to identify the panelists. So here, someone who has come through the fog and is sitting in the studio, Mark Kelsey. Welcome, Mark.
Happy Friday, everyone.
And on the phone, we have Zaz Hollander. Hello, Zaz.
Hello, everybody.
And also on the phone from Talkeetna, we have Philip Manning. Hello, Philip.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Well, there's one topic which seems to have grabbed, other than those events that are happening outside of the state of Alaska, but within the state of Alaska, there's one topic which seems to be right there at the top of the page. And by that, I don't know quite how to describe it. Maybe I would just say the ongoing attempts to fill a seat once held by Mike Dunleavy in the Alaska State Senate. Philip, this decision, when it actually happens, will affect your area significantly.
Mm-hmm.
Would you start by perhaps summarizing your impression of what's happening?
Well, it's only a half-hour show.
So. I know, we're trying to keep it focused.
I think what happened, at least with this latest move, was Governor Walker's way of telling the Republican parties from District 9 and 10, you ordered it, you eat it, with the appointment of Thomas Braund. And so now that he's withdrawn, you know, we're kind of back to the drawing board again. And so we'll see. The Republicans have given another name, but we'll see what the governor does with that at this point.
Right. I think you've captured the essence of this. Let's talk a little bit about background, et cetera. Zaz, have you picked up anything since there was a reference to a new person from Palmer that was being suggested as a potential candidate?
That's not really background. I reported it. ADN reported it. Vicki Wallner apparently is the name that the Republicans are now putting forward, and the governor would still need to approve that. But, I mean, certainly Walker is not innocent in all this. I mean, he chose to appoint Randall Kowalki, knowing full well that would be a controversial appointment. So I think it sort of started in Juneau. And now we're just all playing politics while those of us dopes in the public are just left to sit back and watch. But Vicki Wallner was not the top three vote getters among the Republican Party candidates who were up for potential appointment choices. I can't remember where she fell on the ranking. I have it somewhere here. She was pretty. I mean, she got quite a few votes, but she was not one of the three. And I think the question, frankly, the question for me started when Walker appointed Kowalki was, why not Todd Smolden, who seemed to me like the safest choice of the three? I think that Walker wasn't expected to pick Rauscher, and Braun was a kind of a question mark even before we knew about his Facebook post. But Smolden was no political experience per se, but was smart and conservative and seemed to be. Hit the bell.
Right. And I'm not, I've tried to peruse everything that I could that is background about this. And why did Smolden drop off the radar?
He still is wondering that. For whatever reason, Walker, I think citing his lack of experience, said that he was not an option. And he didn't like any of the three options.
Well, sure. I've got that.
But apparently Braun was the best of the three.
Well, Mark, you've been around watching this kind of thing happen for a long time. And I immediately, when I heard this, the Braun resignation before he was appointed, I thought, oh, this is political theater. This is incredible. The governor has to have looked at this and said, maybe he offered a small smile, but what's your sense of this?
I agree. It is grand political theater. It's great to be a spectator up close to this kind of, turning of the wheels of the political process. I think Zaz had some great comments earlier. I would quibble with the idea that it started with the governor. The process, as it has unfolded, has been proper and legal. It has not been necessarily traditional in the sense of how it has gone down in the past. But the idea that the governor did something extra legal or somehow out of his authority is not at all the case here. And certainly as a longtime nonpartisan person myself, I appreciate Governor Walker's stand for, you know, holding out for someone who represents a more broad cross section of the district. Certainly the folks put up by the party, chosen by a few mostly ideologues at the top, do not have that same kind of broad appeal. So I, for one, appreciate this, even as maybe as ugly as it has seemed, it's still good to see this unfold and get a close-up view of the sausage factory that sometimes is the political process.
So I'm curious, we sometimes skip over the event itself. There was a meeting, and in that meeting there were people that voted, and there was a long list of people who applied, who said they wanted to be in that Senate seat. And there must have been, from what we've been hearing, there was an order of who received the most votes, and next, and next, and next, and on down. I'm curious, do we have any information about who actually was in that meeting? How many people voted? Was it 5 people, 6 people, 10? Zaz, any sense of that?
Hang on, let me find the photo of the vote. There were, it looks like there were, you know, some dozens.
Okay.
Yeah, there were at least 30. There's a picture of the whiteboard from that room that I saw, and it looked like Rauscher got the most votes with 37.
Ah, okay. And so those people were presumably Republicans or official members of some committee?
Yes, they were Republicans. And there were, I mean, the votes went, I have in front of me now, George Rauscher got 37, Smolden got 32, LeBron got 26, Thomas Arts got 22, Wallner got 24, if I didn't say that already. Randall Pawlke got 6. He got fewer than Doyle Holmes did, and Eddie Grasser. And Jim Culver got 2, and Steve Menard got 0.
So one of the names that you mentioned there, Eddie Grasser, of course, has been a name for a long time. He had served as an aide in the legislature for a long period of time, very knowledgeable about the process there. He's gone on to do other things involving groups and committees in the state. I had the pleasure of having him on the program here not so long ago. My impression was that he wasn't actively looking to say, I want to go to the legislature. And yet I saw a report yesterday that put his name as one of the next ones, even though from what you say, his vote record was way down there. Any comment? The sound.
Well, Walkies was too.
Yes.
You know? Well, and that to me is, and apologies for hopping in here, but that to me is one of the more striking things of the process, that a guy like Kewaukee, who's already been elected to office in the district, so that shows he's got wide support. He didn't even make the top 5 of this process. That's, you know, that to me shows something seriously flawed in the process.
Okay, so we have the process ongoing. And the process ongoing at this point, my understanding is the governor has requested additional 2 names. One was quickly offered up, and he said, no, you're going to have to give me more than just one. You'll have to give me a couple of more. Now, does that imply that that group of people will meet once again and come up with names, or will the party hierarchy just simply go down the roll and pick?
Thus far, they seem to be going down the list, seeing as Vicki Wallner was the 4th highest vote getter. I haven't heard that they're going to be meeting again, but I would think they want to get this process moving as much as possible, because, you know, as Zaz alluded to earlier, while this is all happening, and I'll agree with Mark that it is quite a piece of political theater, District E has an empty seat right now.
Right.
And I don't think it's in anyone's best interest, well, certainly not in the party's best interest at this point, to have that seat remain vacant. Given the choices put forward, it might actually be of some benefit to the governor to have that seat empty at the moment, but I don't think that's necessarily why he's doing this.
Right. Well, the other, and now we're sliding into what does this all mean as we go into the future. One of the considerations that's been expressed by other people is to look at the political process of the next election to say whoever it is that is going to accept the role and step into the short-term position has to make that decision whether they're going to run or not. And if they do run, there's a combination of things at work here. One, they're in a place where they can demonstrate their quality as acting in as a senator, but they also are precluded from doing some of the kind of campaigning that many people do as they're heading toward the fall. And of course, that would be exacerbated as a problem if the legislature continues with special sessions into the summer. So if Kowalki is not chosen, he has already indicated he's going to run. So he goes off and keeps running. And any comment about that, Zaz?
I've got nothing on that one, Mike.
Okay, Mark?
Well, yeah, I'm very curious if anyone has heard that maybe Kowalki might be back in the mix if he emerges as some sort of compromise candidate now. Has anyone heard anything about this?
I haven't.
No.
No.
No. Okay.
I agree, though, that the...
Yes, Philip?
Oh, I have heard that there's a possibility that there might be some disunity, at least within District 10, as far as what's going on with the party. There's indications that there's some displeasure with the chair there, Doyle Holmes, who was Kowalki's opponent in the assembly race a couple of years ago. So I'm not sure what that's going to lead to, if anything, but I think you've got what's being presented as a very united front, and I'm not positive how true that is behind closed doors, as is often the case.
Right. Okay. Well, Philip, you are, as we started out the show, said in a place where this is going to have the greatest impact, since Tokina is in a location that will be served by the new senator. What are you finding people in that area are saying about this process, or who they would like to see, or anything like that?
Well, for the most part, people are just asking me what the heck is going on.
And you have said, okay.
So, as far as who they prefer, I will say, you know, after the implementation of the sales tax and the way that went down, that Kowalki's popularity has definitely taken a hit in this area. I will say for sure. Now, to what
over
extent,
what?
The sales tax that was implemented for the sewer and water system here.
He was the sponsor on that.
He carried it, and the way it went through was not the way that local organizations, the community council, chamber of commerce, not the way that they wanted it. They wanted to see it seasonal and at a lower percentage. Turns out now it's year-round and at 3%, and there's a lot of folks unhappy about that, as well as the fact that, you know, there wasn't a cap for a while. That part's been fixed. I think it'll be interesting to see if he can get out from under that when it comes time to actually run. Of course, at this point, when I checked the Division of Elections website earlier this week, his was the only name on District E so far. I'm sure that'll change.
Right. Okay. Okay. Further implications. Does this whole kerfluffle work to the governor's advantage or to the Republican Party's advantage?
That's a good question, and I think it's an open question. Since so much of it is still unsettled, I think it will be easier to answer that question once there's a person in the seat. But it's got potential, I think, to be good for the governor. And I think by extension, it has the potential to be good for the voters of the district and the state, especially considering how many people are not party affiliated.
So lost in all of this discussion about the replacement, where in the world is former Senator Mike Dunleavy?
He's brushing a horse somewhere.
Go ahead, Philip.
Raising campaign funds, according to what I've been reading this week.
Yeah.
Right. But he has not been prominent. I have not yet seen him speak to this particular issue, or for that matter, maybe I have missed it, and he's been raising money, and that's the focus he has. But he has not been out there in anything that I have seen. Have you seen something else?
He or his people posted something on Facebook, I think, under the Alaskans for Dunleavy page about just something about how the governor should honor the process.
Okay.
General statement early on.
So have we beaten this horse to death in one way of describing it? Is there anything else to squeeze out of something which I thought was very powerful moment that is not just going to go away? Will obviously have implications, because whoever it is that's going to go on down there, if it's a person without too much experience, is going to be thrown into the middle of this fast flowing river of legislative process. So, done.
Well, I think we may have sufficiently beaten it for now, but there's surely more floggings in the future.
Oh yeah, it's not over by any stretch.
Okay, well, with that, Philip, other than this particular issue, let's pick up and say, what are people in Talkeetna also asking you about beyond this particular issue?
Well, this week it's basketball scores. The Crowley Classic basketball tournament's happening this weekend, so there's a lot of local attention being paid to that. And like I said, the sales tax is still quite the issue because it's new. It just got implemented in January. I think a lot of businesses and business owners are just now really figuring out how to implement it best for their business, how it's going to impact what they do, that sort of thing.
Right.
People are generally happy that the maximum taxable transaction cap was put in at $1,000. There were some unintended consequences when that was taken out. There was pretty universal support from what I could see for putting that back in. I think there's still a lot of folks unhappy about the fact that things like utilities, fuel oil, that sort of thing, even your water bill are subject to the sales tax. But I don't, at least thus far, haven't seen an appetite from Randall Kowalki or anyone else on the assembly to address that issue. But I think there's still going to be some local effort to try to get that changed.
You know, what will be interesting is to watch Kowalki on the assembly and see how much pandering, for lack of a better word that I can think of right now, you know, how much his potential run for office, higher office, influences his actions on assembly. He's been pretty unpredictable.
Yes. Some have said mercurial in the sense that he goes along doing things in what might be called a professional way, asking questions, et cetera. And then there's this little spike that comes out that has him attempting to address a problem with something that might be called a little over the top in terms of a proposal.
Yeah, the conversation starters that kind of shock everybody.
Right. I've seen that happen. Well, let us go then turn to you, Zaz. You have obviously noted the topics we've been talking about. Are there particular topics that you have that are in your immediate focus?
Well, interestingly enough, my focus, well, I have two focus foci. One is in my backyard and the other is in Phillips. The kind of long-running legal action between the Sheldon siblings, Holly Sheldon Lee and her brother Robert Sheldon, both of them children of Don and Roberta Sheldon, for the premier Glacier first family of Denali, got to the Supreme Court this week. There were oral arguments in Anchorage on Wednesday, on Valentine's Day. And so that the issue is with the family trust. Robert Sheldon is the administrator, and Holly Sheldon has sued him in 2015 alleging that he wasn't administering the trust in good faith, and then that there was a settlement reached that she didn't know was a settlement. And she's lost at every lower court level, but now it's before the state's highest court, and they'll take it under advisement and have, you know, a ruling in, what, 6 months or so, you know, give or take.
Okay. And topic two.
Topic two is Hatcher Pass Road was not being plowed up, you know, past, I think, the Gold Mint Trailhead at the hairpin turn past where the Mother Lode Lodge used to be, for those of you who know the Palmer side of Hatcher Pass.
Right.
And there was a medical call up there. It sounded like somebody on a snow machine had a badly broken leg or a badly broken bone. I think it was a leg, compound fracture, making their way down to Archangel Road, which is up higher than Gold Mint.
Right.
And responders couldn't get up there because the road hadn't been plowed, and we've been getting quite a bit of snow. And so DOT had stopped plowing because of avalanche danger and did, I guess, a quick assessment of the danger and then sent some plow trucks up to assist in this rescue. So it all happened rather quickly yesterday afternoon.
Okay. All right. Well, just following up on your reference regarding people suing, et cetera, Dallas Seavey, just want to make sure, since the Iditarod is coming up here soon, has suggested that he has proof that someone else doped his dogs. And there has been also a call, which had been rejected, that the head of the Iditarod Trail Committee resigned. So the controversy still sort of dogs the Iditarod. Philip, I understand that this year there'll be a southern route taken. It appears to be enough snow to have a local start for that. How are people looking toward the Iditarod in Talkeetna?
Well, first of all, grade A punter a minute ago. But
thank you.
I think people are looking forward to it and primarily – one, for the event itself, but also it's always a bit of a shot in the arm economically. March, you get a lot of events happening in the Northern Valley, and the Iditarod kind of kicks that off. So you got a lot of people coming into the area, a lot of hotel rooms, people chartering flights to go up to checkpoints, of course the restaurants. So it's kind of the first big event that starts bringing a little hint of that summer money back into the Upper Valley. So I think folks are pretty excited about it. Plus, it's just a really cool event.
Okay, that's good. Well, since you've been talking about cool events, let's talk about a hot event that happens in the summer, and that, of course, is the Alaska State Fair. Zaz, I seem to remember that you were able to write a little bit about the Alaska State Fair and the annual meeting and just how well the fair did last year.
Yeah, so I'd heard that the annual meeting, which was pretty well attended, it sounded like, that there were some financials announced, and the fair confirmed that they were actually a little under $500,000 in the red, in large part because of the money spent on concerts, which are always expensive, and not returned in revenue because of low numbers of audience members. And the fair, Dean Phipps, who's the marketing manager and a music guy, he said it can be a real struggle to get people out on a weekday night, especially when it's cold. I mean, I went to the fair a couple times. I'm sure most of you guys did. And it was kind of not unpleasant. I mean, it's the fair, so you don't expect great sunny weather. It's a bonus when it happens. But it was cold on the Ferris wheel. And so the idea of standing outside listening to music, especially with prices the way they are, can be off-putting. And so the fair has established a new system where if you're buying a concert ticket, you get a six-pack rate for fair admissions. And they're trying some kind of a mysterious new algorithm to figure out which acts will sell. So be very curious. I think next month is when most of the music will be announced or the attractions will be announced. They've got Jim Gaffigan coming, who is a really funny stand-up comedian. So that should be a good draw.
And following up after the annual meeting, I believe I saw a news release that said that they were not going to follow through with changing the annual meeting date from when it happens here in the winter, the first day of the fair. Zaz, did you note that?
I talked to several fair officials, and I think that was the direction they were headed in.
Right. There had been a technical legal issue associated with the voting, the balloting that was being done mail-in and in person. And the intention of one of the changes was to encourage a much higher participation. And it was thought that by having that annual meeting on the first day of the fair, you're going to have a lot of people there. You're going to have a lot of, and remember that we're talking about people who attend the annual meeting who can vote are members of the fair. And the last time I looked at somewhere roughly 600 members, I think, in the fair. So even though there might be up toward 300,000 people who come to the fair, these members are the ones that are able to vote and determine who's on the board and bylaw changes, other things of that sort. So I think that it's good to keep that in perspective. And as of right now, my understanding is until they have another vote, it looks as if this is what's going to happen. The annual meeting will continue to be in February. So with that, I think we've come to the end of another edition of Valley Edition. And I want to thank Mark Kelsey for making it into the studio.
Have a great week, everyone.
And I want to thank Zaz Hollander for calling in. Thank you, Zaz.
Sure thing. Have a good weekend and week, everybody.
Right. And especially I want to thank Philip Manning for calling in from Talkeetna. Have a good weekend up there.
Oh, thank you very much. Go Rams.
All right. Okay. Take care now.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.